Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. On an average workday, tens of thousands of commuters pass through the train station at Hoboken, New Jersey, one of the busier commuter hubs in the state. The station remains closed, however, as investigators continue to pick through the wreckage of last week's fatal train crash. This hour, we'll get the latest on the accident. Also, would a safety system called positive train control have helped to prevent it? And can New Jersey Transit, which is grappling with a $45 million budget deficit, even afford the hundreds of millions it would take to implement PTC? And as always, we're happy to have you weigh in. If you ride the rails, what do you think of your commute and safety? 888-477-9499 is the number to call, or you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Let us know what you think. To start us off, we get an update on the investigation at Hoboken from Patrick McGeehan, a reporter with the New York Times. Hello, Patrick.
Good morning.
So I've heard that crews on the scene are removing rubble by hand. So the scene is still unstable, Patrick?
It is, and they still haven't been able to get at the lead car, which is where the best information is going to come from.
And that is where I understand one of the black boxes is located. There are two that were to have been on board this train, correct?
Right. These trains are supposed to have one in the lead car and one in the operating car. This kind of train runs in both directions. The locomotive either pushes or pulls the train. In this case, it was pushing the train into Hoboken. So there should be an operating black box in either end. The one in the back in the locomotive turned out not to be working. So they're hoping that the one in the front was working, because otherwise they won't have any data.
Yeah. Well, what sort of data would they expect to pull from the box in the front of the train should it be working? What might we learn from that?
Well, the most important thing we'd learn is the speed of the train at different locations. So how fast was this train going as it entered the yard leading to the terminal and at the end when it hit the bumper inside the terminal?
We'd had a lot of information coming in. Witnesses who say they thought that the train was coming in very quickly, faster than the limit of 10 miles per hour. But then other reports say that it seemed to have been following the speed limit. What are you hearing? What is the latest?
Well, the NTSB says that the engineer said in his interview with them that the last thing he recalls is the train was going 10 miles an hour. Now, that would be at some point within the yard an acceptable speed as it decelerated to zero before it got to the end of the track. But we don't have any data to back that up. So the passengers on the train all seem to think that the train was going much faster, as fast as maybe 30 miles an hour through the yard, when normally it would be braking, you know, decelerating down to stop.
What else do we know about what the engineer Thomas Gallagher is saying? He says he doesn't remember the crash. What else?
Well, he says he woke up on the floor of the cab after the crash, and he doesn't recall anything that happened immediately prior to it. The last thing he remembers is that he was going 10 miles an hour. He said he was not tired, and that his cell phone was stowed in his backpack, so he wasn't distracted by his cell phone, which have been issues in other crashes of trains around the country.
So, and there are, I'm assuming, alcohol and drug tests still pending, or the results from those tests?
Yes, the NTSB said they have a urine sample that they're testing, but we haven't heard the results of that yet.
How long does it take to get results from something like that?
I would think we would have had them by now. I'm expecting that we'll hear about that today.
How long had Gallagher worked as an engineer? Is that information available?
Yes, he's a veteran of the railroad. He's been driving trains for them for quite a long time. He's no newbie. So experience wasn't an issue.
Patrick, you've been at the scene. Describe it for us, at least from if not from what is going on there to recover information, but just from a bystander, how does it strike you?
Well, it reminds you of how old that facility is, that the technology that exists in other places in the rail industry, you know, isn't there yet. So Hoboken Terminal is a very old, beautiful old Beaux-Arts building. These trains come, and it's called a terminal because the trains end there. They don't go through. It's a terminal like Grand Central Terminal. So these trains are trains that start and end their runs in Hoboken.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that it's so when these trains come in, they're running toward a bumper. You know, it's just essentially the last thing to block the train from hitting people who are on the platforms or in the waiting room. And this train went right over that bumper and into the air and brought down the shed, what I would call the shed, the roof of the tracks, over the tracks and the platform. It hit the edge of the building, but it didn't go into the passenger waiting area.
So commuters are then on any normal day standing near the bumper area.
Yes. I'm amazed that only one person was killed by a train at rush hour going off the end of the track, because just to one side of this track is the entrance to the PATH train, which is a subway that goes under the river to Manhattan. And many of the people coming off these trains in the morning just pour right down the stairwell into the PATH to catch a train to Manhattan. So usually there would be a clot of people heading right off the train platforms toward the PATH platforms down below.
I wonder why it was constructed that way in the first place. And that's probably going way back, because this station is, well over 100 years old, correct?
Yes, it is. And it's an amalgam, right? It's a ferry terminal. You can catch ferries across the river to Manhattan there. It's a PATH train, a subway train, as I said, and it's also the commuter train. So it's this nexus of all these three modes, actually four modes, because there's a light train rail that now has been built that connects the waterfront of New Jersey. So there are four modes of transportation, mass transit right there.
And has this sort of thing happened before at the Hoboken Terminal? Do you know?
Well, this railroad hasn't had a fatal accident in 20 years prior to this. It had a good record in terms of, you know, serious crashes. Nothing's happened like this in Hoboken in a very long time.
All right. Well, so one person died. Well over 100 were injured. Lawsuits, I understand, are being filed. Do you have a sense of how many?
How many lawsuits?
Yeah. Have you heard?
No, I haven't heard. I'm sure there will be lawsuits on behalf of the people who were injured, and certainly, you know, I would guess the family of the woman who was killed, but I haven't heard anything about that yet.
Patrick, we're going to be discussing positive train control in depth as we go through the show, but for the moment, is there a sense now among officials that had PTC been in use, there was a chance this accident might not have happened? What are you hearing?
Well, there, in these crashes now, there is a tendency to jump right to that conclusion. I don't think we can tell yet, because positive train control is designed to slow trains or brake them in cases of emergency or excessive speed, and it works out on the rails. How it works inside a yard and this close to a terminal, I'm not certain. I'm not certain that had they installed PTC at NJ Transit, that they would have had it in this place where it would have stopped a train that's supposed to be essentially rolling to a stop.
I'm hearing different things about how far New Jersey Transit has gotten in installing PTC, that they've actually made no headway at all, or there's been a little work done. What have you been hearing, Patrick?
Yeah, they had started making progress on it, and they were testing the equipment. They had installed it on one locomotive and one cab car in an experiment. So they were starting to figure out how they would install it, but they haven't installed it pretty much at all. Their latest progress report just shows it's all zeroed out. They're nowhere along the way to meeting this deadline of the end of 2018.
And do we know why that is?
Well, the main reason is cost. It's a very expensive thing. Some people think this is not an expensive technology, but it is. And these railroads, this one in particular, are hard-pressed to make a big capital investment beyond the normal repairs and state of good repair maintenance that they're doing.
Well, the day after the train crash, there's an announcement that funding for the Transportation Trust Fund in New Jersey is agreed upon. What do you make of the timing of this as a reporter? And also, second part of that is what might this mean for New Jersey Transit?
Well, answer to the second part, it will mean that New Jersey Transit can proceed with a whole lot of projects that had been put on hold because the governor had issued an executive order when the Transportation Trust Fund basically ran dry earlier this year. How it will affect New Jersey Transit, going forward, how soon it will make any difference, we'll see. There clearly was political pressure added by this crash because it raised questions about the state of NJ Transit, given the financial problems it's had. And so I think there was already progress on this gas tax deal between the governor and the Democratic leaders prior to Friday's announcement, but I think that it probably focused some minds. This crash did.
Well, and again, back to New Jersey Transit and what needs to be done, and it might tie directly into this accident. I had read that NJ Transit had to put $3 billion worth of projects on hold when the Transportation Trust Fund essentially ran dry 3 months ago. So $3 billion worth of projects sounds like an awful lot of work, and I'm guessing it includes work on rails and safety updates on trains. Do you have that information at your fingertips,
well,
Patrick McGann?
They didn't abandon all projects. So what the governor did was issue an executive order that projects that weren't necessary for the safety of the traveling public, both the roads and the rails, that those projects would be put on hold. And so those projects include things like station upgrades. There are places where NJ Transit's rebuilding a train station, and that kind of thing would have been put on hold immediately. So it wasn't that they immediately stopped doing all work, including work that would affect safety. But it's certainly a setback to them that they've gone the three best months of the year for doing this sort of work. They didn't get any of that done. So they're behind schedule on all those projects now.
And one more quick question, Patrick. Have you heard when train service might resume at Hoboken? We've only got about 5-10 seconds.
Yeah, no, I don't think we know yet. I think later this week, but maybe not for another couple of days.
All right. Patrick McGinn with the latest on the investigation into the Hoboken train crash on Thursday. Patrick reports for The New York Times. Thank you so much for joining us for Radio Times.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Stay with us. 888-477-9499 if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Radio Times continues in just a moment. You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. We've been getting the latest information on the train crash at Hoboken last Thursday. So for the remainder of the show, we'll be looking at funding infrastructure repair in New Jersey, including the rails. New Jersey Transit is an agency in crisis, which with a huge budget deficit, and it has barely begun to implement a safety system called Positive Train Control, which has been mandated by Congress. We'll be looking at a PTC in depth as well. Joining us for the rest of the hour, Ryan Hutchins is with us via Skype. He is New Jersey Bureau Chief for Politico. Hello, Ryan.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And Joe Martin is a civil engineering professor at Drexel University. He's here with us in studio. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Let's tackle the latest news regarding funding and maintaining infrastructure in New Jersey, including the rail system. On Friday, the day after the crash, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, Governor Christie and legislative leaders held a news conference to say they've agreed to raise the gas tax and to phase out or drop some other taxes. So the Transportation Trust Fund is once again up and running. Ryan Hutchins, how do you see this as affecting NJ Transit and upgrades and safety?
It's extremely important for NJ Transit. As you noted, billions of dollars in capital projects had been frozen because the state simply ran out of money for transportation projects because its funds had been mismanaged for years. It over-leveraged its debt, and it got to the point where the entire gas tax, which hasn't been raised until now since 1988, was going to pay for debt service, and then they were taking more money out of the budget. So this will allow for $2 billion a year to be spent on NJ Transit, as well as road and bridge projects, Department of Transportation projects. And, I mean, this is key to keeping the railroad healthy and operating anything close to safely.
Ryan Hutchins, did you see the announcement coming on Friday?
No, absolutely not. We got 19 minutes notice for a 4:30 p.m. press conference. And there were no questions taken. It was you talked earlier about the idea that this accident pushed it along. I think that's certainly true. I also think it was like the perfect opportunity for a news dump for them to say we're going to raise gas tax 23 cents and do it on a Friday while all this other news was going on and before the Jewish New Year.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And again, the relief of the impasse wasn't expected to happen until after Election Day. A quick question for you before we move on to positive train control. I'm just wondering if there's fallout at the top, if an accident investigation into what happened at Hoboken, it points to an issue with, say, maintenance or lack of maintenance on rails or the brakes on the trains which crashed because there wasn't the funding. I know Patrick McGeehan had said when the Transportation Trust Fund, when the impasse happened in the summer, there was a provision to allow emergency work to be done. But still, there were $3 billion worth of projects sitting out there. So just wondering what might happen at the top if this is where the accident investigation goes. What do you think?
I'm really reluctant to believe that this freeze on transportation funding over a few months would have anything to do with this accident. But obviously, we don't know the cause of it. We don't know what happened here. And there's conflicting information. Was the train going too fast? Was it not going too fast? I do know that the positive train control project was not frozen as part of this stalemate over raising the gas tax, but. Even if it had been, it wouldn't change anything. They haven't been able, they're just in an experimental stage. They haven't been able to implement positive train control. And also, I think it's important to note the context of this happening at the Hoboken train station, because that train station is actually exempt from positive train control requirements. It's been since 2010. The agency petitioned the Federal Railroad Administration for an exception, and it actually was granted.
Why is that?
So railroads can ask for exemptions if for certain track segments, but they have to have certain rules set up in place for those track segments, and it would have to have trains won't travel more than 20 miles per hour. It must have other equipment on board that could slow down a speeding train in the case of human error. And apparently they'd met these requirements for Hoboken. But obviously tragedy occurred nonetheless.
Yeah, wondering if that might change as the investigation continues. Okay, back to that in just a moment. But Joe Martin, let's bring you into the conversation here. Positive train control is not an inexpensive system to install.
It depends a lot on how much you're doing. It is geographical. It's place by place. So there has to be, for the system, there's an infrastructure, basic infrastructure at the dispatcher and in a couple of locomotives and so forth. And then since it's geographical, it's linear. I just got to give you an example. That Amtrak, for last year with the crash at Port Richmond, they had PTC on the southbound, but not the northbound.
Yeah.
And the reason is it was analog digital, you could put it like that, but they had made a rational decision that southbound there was more likely, because it was a 10-foot stretch of straight line coming down from Croydon, that a train could get out of control. So that's where, from an engineering point of view, they put their money. And then later on, they were planning to do it on a northbound, and the reason why they hadn't done it on a northbound is because nobody figured that you could get up to 100 miles an hour coming out of North Philadelphia Station. So there is a fixed cost to putting in a system, and then there's an a la carte, point by point, section by section is a better way.
All right. And Ryan Hutchins, back to you. It sounds as if there has been money set aside to implement PTC on NJ Transit.
Yeah, there has been. I don't know precisely how much. I apologize. But I believe there is money set aside, but it's a significant cost, and obviously they've gotten pretty much nowhere. I mean, they're simply they've already extended the deadline for positive train control, and yet NJ Transit is simply in a theoretical phase of seeing if they can possibly implement it. As Patrick noted before, they're simply testing the technology on basically one train and on one stretch of tracks to see if it works, and it's going to take a long time to implement that, and they're obviously not going to be able to do it by the deadline.
Yeah, Congress says now 2018, so Joe Martin, if they're in the testing phase over at New Jersey Transit, I mean, can you get it up and running in 3 years or 2 years, I should say?
I highly doubt it. These are very complex systems that involves not only installation equipment, but testing it on the exact line that you're there. So remember back at the Amtrak that we had the engineer and this Mr. Gallagher, too, running this line forth and back and forth. The last thing you want is false positives, that it kicks in and stops the train with people in it. So by definition, you have to test it at night in other situations. So installing and testing piece by piece is a multi-year effort. I wouldn't say 2018 is impossible, but it's a long-term thing. And if they're starting from pretty much nothing now, then I would doubt that.
All right. So I know you've talked about this, Marty Moskowain has talked about positive train control on this program. But if you would give us a bit of a refresher, a quick look at how PTC works.
Sure. I'll tell you two things, what it's supposed to do, unless I get cut off, to how I'm supposed to do it. The what it's supposed to do is two completely different elements. One is movement control. You can't steer trains. So the first thing is to do is to make sure that the train is on the right track. And so this is a outgrowth of the old semaphore block signal system that's been in trains for hundreds of years. And the basic idea is to prevent a collision between two trains, either a head-on collision or single track or one overtaking the other. So the whole thing, first of all, is about a better way to be able to say, this is where the train is, and if it's in the wrong place, do something about it immediately. I was in the SEPTA dispatching station a year ago, and it's amazing the technology to see where things are. So as you'd imagine, this is GPS-based. That's the first part.
And I think this is being installed in SEPTA as we speak. I mean, 40% there.
SEPTA is very well along. Yeah. And I think that the SEPTA finalization is an awful lot on the place where it shares track with Amtrak. So once again, that's another complexity. Two totally operating systems working at the same time takes a lot of testing and a lot of putting stuff together. So SEPTA is in very good progress. Amtrak's in extremely good progress. The other thing it's supposed to do, which is more at issue here, I guess, is that the speed control. And that brings into the issue, I'll get to that, about why Windside Hoboken Station. So when you're driving down the road, you're looking at your speedometer, you know how fast you are, you see something ahead, a curve, a traffic light, a kid in a big wheel, or whatever, and you mentally figure out how long it's going to take you to brake, and if you're going too fast, you slow down. This is done by the engineer, too. It has happened for, let's say, 100 years since the railroads were invented. However, you can stop a whole lot better with rubber tires on an asphalt or concrete road than a steel wheel on a steel rail. You've seen the CSX acts. They're very efficient. So this is trying to come up with a speed control. So what we're looking at is in some manner or other, so we start at the engine. The engine has a little microprocessor of its own that is getting information in some manner, and I'll get to that, to how fast it's going. It's testing that against, well, it can't see. like the engineer or you and I can. So it's almost like a cruise missile. It's a topographic map, and that's why it's highly geographical. So there's a map of how the layout is ahead, and the engine knows, here we are, this is a curve, this curve can handle 50 miles an hour, I'm going 80, I'll do something.
If the engineer is not going to 80, yeah, or down to 50.
Precisely.
Okay.
So it's a backup on the engineer.
Got it. Okay. So quickly, what are the very human factors involved in the engineer's job?
Well, there's a piece in between. The engineer is doing this anyway. This is how the trains have worked for a long time. So the speed control is a next factor of safety upon a system that has been working reasonably well. And the earlier reference was there have not been many accidents on there, on the New Jersey Transit at all. So it's an extra factor of safety on that. And the other thing that has to happen is it can't mess up the system, so that we're adding new and new people to it. We have an automation in the locomotive, which tries to slow it down. But before you do that, you're going to have to tell the engineer, because the engineer may – these are obviously very conservative. So the engineer, knowing he has to make 3 minutes' time, says, no, let's hold off on a bit. Meanwhile – this, another group of people has to know everything about this are the dispatchers, because the whole trick in the train system is where you get to junctions. So the trains come together at switches and junctions and a dispatcher. So the fact that the engine, the engineer, and the dispatcher all have to be aware of what's going on complicates things, yeah, and brings
complex
in the human factor.
Complex system, yeah. All right. We've got telephone calls coming in and some comments coming in. Let's go to Paolo in Delaware County. You are live on Radio Times with us. Hi, Paolo.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment here about transportation and transit and highways in general. The highway system, the transportation system, is basically funded by drivers through their gas tax, and they are a minority user. It seems irrational to say that, but they are the minority user of the system in transportation planning terms. The majority users of the system are actually big office buildings and big activity centers like malls and whatever. Those centers which generate two-thirds on a regional basis, about two-thirds of the trips that are generated that are accommodated in the transportation system, are not paid for by the generators, these office building owners. They're paid for by the homeowner,
driver. Paolo, the line's a little fuzzy, so at least from what I'm hearing here in the studio. So I think we got the gist of what you're saying, and thank you very much for your call to Radio Times. Ryan Hutchins, this is not this is an argument we've heard before, that the gas tax is not raising the gas tax is not the answer, that it's hurting people who don't necessarily use the transportation system, or at least the way this is being funded.
Well, I mean, it's paid by people who do use the roads and bridges, and a lot of the money from the Transportation Trust Fund does go to fund those things. But, you know, NJ Transit is also funded by fares. It gets a state subsidy that's been diminished significantly over the last few years by the Christie administration, you know, money from the state's general fund, from general tax revenue. And you know, it's not in great financial shape. It's got a $45 million budget hole for this budget year that, as far as I know, they haven't publicly said how they're going to, plug. Maybe they've figured it out, but they haven't had a public meeting in more than 100 days, so we wouldn't know.
Go ahead, Joe Martin.
There's another element to that. That's a very good argument over most of the country and maybe into Philadelphia, but not in the New York City market. The three of the largest commuter operations in the country are flipping people into New York City between New Jersey Transit, Long Island Railroad, and Metro North. Almost a million people come into Manhattan every day. So if they drove into work, nobody could drive.
All right, let's get to an email from Adam. He says, I ride the local and interstate trains from Philadelphia to New Jersey and New York and back. With the total statistics of train accidents that occur, would the addition of the PTC safety system in the region lower or eliminate train accidents altogether, or even lower damage costs from train accidents? Is it foolproof?
Absolutely not. there's a one caveat of the PTC system that I brought thought up and talked about Hoboken Station. It can't react very quickly. So that was why it was very easy to get a Hoboken. A Hoboken issue is really about the speed coming into the yard, not the speed within the train shed that caused it to go through there. So it might have been speeding. It might have violated. Way outside the yard, PTC works. Inside the yard, it can't. And I want to tell you about the accidents. The most common accident in trains is people being hit in the tracks for intruding on it, by far. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing this can do. There's no way a PTC can prevent that. That an engineer will see, and the sensors will see this person when it's too late.
Well, Joe Martin, what's an answer then for a station like Hoboken, in which trains come to a stop against bumpers and that there are commuters? And
PTC would prevent a train coming into the station yard at excessive speed.
Okay.
But it would not prevent it if it turned out is when they're in there, something jolted and accelerated. Okay.
Okay. Let's get back to NJ Transit for just a minute before we go to the break. Ryan Hutchins, you mentioned that its board of directors hasn't gotten together in several months. There's no permanent executive director. What's going on there?
It's hard for us to know without any public meetings. Really, it's the picture started to be painted that it's a mess. At least enough so that that the FRA felt the need to do an audit. Now, these are somewhat routine audits, and a lot of other agencies have had them. But from the reports that were out there this weekend, the FRA found dozens of violations. And is preparing a formal conclusion that I guess will be released to the public. We didn't know about this until this accident happened, that there'd been this investigation. They looked at past safety-related incidents, potential violations in rail yards.
You know what, Ryan? Hold that thought for a moment. We're up against a break, but I want to get to that as soon as we come back. Ryan Hutchins is New Jersey Bureau Chief for Politico, and Joe Martin is with us too, civil engineering professor at Drexel University. If you'd like to join the conversation, 888-477-9499. Stay with us. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. We are getting an update on the Hoboken train crash last week and also talking about positive train control, which is not yet implemented on NJ Transit lines and trains. Our guests this hour, Joe Martin, civil engineering professor at Drexel University. Also, Ryan Hutchins, New Jersey Bureau Chief for Politico. And as always, lines are open, 888-477-9499. Or you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And Ryan Hutchins, going into the break, we were talking about an audit done by the Federal Railroad Administration on New Jersey Transit because of an apparent increase in safety violations. Do we know what those violations involve?
Just anecdotally, so I didn't report on this personally, but the Associated Press, the Wall Street Journal, New York Times had reports over the weekend citing an unnamed official who was, familiar with this audit, presumably someone at the FRA. They described general, past safety-related incidents, potential violations on rail yards. And there have been... there were apparently issues, where they issued violations for, alcohol or drug use or operations issues on the rails. NJ Transit has been involved in about 150 accidents that caused about $5 million in damage to tracks and equipment since January 2011. There were 25 accidents in 2015 and 10 in the first 7 months of this year, and none caused death or injuries.
And as mentioned, the board of directors hasn't met for months. There's no permanent executive director in place. It seems that there is a vacuum at top. I don't know if I'm characterizing that correctly. So who in state government, if anyone, should intervene from a public safety standpoint? What do you think, Ryan Hutchins?
Well, it really, I mean, the buck stops at the top, buck stops at the governor. While this is a agency that has its own board, it is operated in some sense almost as a department within the state, and Governor Chris Christie is clearly in charge of the agency. You know, whether he feels he needs to step in and he needs to get a permanent executive director and make some changes there. They've had some retirements in recent years of some of the senior career people, and they've had, you know, departures at the top of political appointees. You know, right now he has, you know, and he has taken the agency's chief of staff on as his communication director. The governor himself has, and his former press secretary, Michael Droniak, who's been discussed at the Bridgegate trial in the past week, is now the acting chief of staff at the agency. And you know, so, but it repeatedly comes back to the governor. A lot of the decisions they've had to make, we heard over and over again during negotiations over labor contracts with the railroad that came close to having a strike that would have, excuse me, shut down the railroad. We have to hear from Trenton. We have to hear from Trenton. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And that goes back to what does the governor think?
Yeah. All right. To the phones we go. Rose is in Flemington, New Jersey. Welcome to Radio Times, Rose.
Hi. Interesting show as always.
Thanks.
I would like to make a couple of quick points. Excuse me. First of all, there was a nasty accident in San Sebastian, Spain, where the engineer was calling on his cell phone. My machinery is, you know, going wacky here, and it was a nasty, nasty wreck. And is this something that we might want to worry about? Or secondly, when we sent back the, was it $2 billion or whatever, to Washington on those additional tunnels, which would have gone directly into New York, might that have lessened up some of the feeder traffic so that things like this wouldn't happen?
All right. Thanks for the call to Radio Time Show. So we'll take the second part first. Ryan Hutchins, what do you think? The tunnels that...
I'm sorry. The question was, would if we had actually built, you know, the ARC tunnel that was planned to New York, would that have, you know, let in traffic? I mean, it would have been important. I mean, we still have... these tunnels up and running to the city that may, in fact, if the ARC was open, already have been under construction. The problem right now is that these tunnels have a limited lifespan of 2 decades left or less, and work needs to begin, because if they have to take one tunnel out of service, it reduces the number of trains that could flow per hour by 75%. So they're starting to plan right now for something called the Gateway Tunnel, which isn't the same thing as ARC. Governor Christie says it's even better than ARC. It will go to Penn Station, and you know, work is underway for that. Whether, I mean, that would have to do with anything with safety issues, I don't really know.
Well, perhaps relieving the flow into New York and back during rush hour.
Right. Yeah, and you know, and one thing that's planned as part of the Gateway project is this something called the Secaucus Loop. Mm-hmm. And it would allow, so right now, you know, some trains go straight into Hoboken, and they can't go to Penn Station. It's this one in particular, it kind of dead ends in Hoboken, and then you either get on the PATH train or you get on a ferry to go, or a bus to go to the city. The Secaucus Loop will allow some trains now to have a one-seat ride that currently, you know, are unable to make it to Penn Station will be able to go all the way to Penn Station. You know, so, yeah, that's important. It would certainly relieve some congestion. Once you're able to rebuild the existing North River tunnels, you'd have a lot of extra capacity to get across the river. And there's still talk of the 7 train, extending the 7 train to Secaucus, New Jersey, you know, as part of discussions about what to do about a Port Authority bus terminal. You know, it seems unlikely to happen in the context of New York officials who are advocating for rebuilding the Port Authority bus terminal in New Jersey, which is something New Jersey officials despise.
Well, there
was also the question about the phone.
Yes, yes. And I think what Rose was getting to actually was she was alluding to the possibility of cyber attacks. I'm thinking, if I took that correctly, on the train system. And I wanted to toss this over to Joe for a moment. As positive train control is implemented, there are computer systems that work there. And correct?
Yeah, but it's kind of self-contained.
So it's not something that could be hacked.
There would be no reason for the computer system to be integrated with anything else. The place where that might be a leak or vulnerability would be to interoperability with, let's say, CSX, where they run on common tracks. I don't even know if NJ Transit has that, but Amtrak in particular. But these are self-contained systems, and so there's very little possibility somebody can come outside and bother them.
And Ryan, did you want to add to that?
Sure. Well, she just asked the question about talking on the phone and whether that was an issue. I imagine it could be an issue in general terms, but in the case of the Hoboken crash, the NTSB is saying that the engineer had his phone locked away and stored and wasn't.
Yeah, but that's the piece of PTC. It doesn't do anything that the present system doesn't do. It just reassures us better. So engineered distraction way back when, from engineered distraction with the dead man's throttle, that's an old story there, that engineered distraction on a train causes train wrecks. So PTC's control of speed is a check on the engineer. That's all it does. Yeah. And there's a finite statistical probability that an engineer will be distracted, and that's what they're for.
So it's not a foolproof
backup system. Not at all.
Backup
it's another a backup system.
Okay. So, again, the new deadline, according to Congress, to have this installed nationwide is 2018. And as we were discussing a little bit earlier, Joe, you didn't see that was going to happen for a number of systems because of...
I couldn't see it possibly if you're starting from zero. And it's a shame because actually I go a little further than my colleague here, that New Jersey Transit was a pioneer. They actually took an abandoned track and used it as a test track and so forth. So they were ahead of everybody else 6 years ago and testing it out and saying this is how it could be done. And then they stopped in their track, so to speak. Bad pun, I'm sorry, but I can't imagine this. They could probably deploy it for some critical junctions, just like Amtrak did. They would sit there and say they could identify. And by the way, this is part of leadership. This is an executive decision. Somebody very high up in Amtrak said, "We only got so much money. We only have so many time to do it. We're going to put it at here on the recommendation of my engineers." So the vacuum in leadership, which I know nothing more about, is very difficult when you have to basically make hard choices.
Well, let me ask you this, and I don't know how much you might know about this. Following the accident last year, in which eight people died in Philadelphia, the Amtrak accident, I read not too long ago that Amtrak has installed positive train control all along the Northeast Corridor. I'm just wondering how much of that happened after the Philly accident.
I think it was all scheduled.
Okay.
I think that they had done a logical system. They were there on their way, and this unfortunate incident happened. So I would say, not knowing any further than following that story, that this is how to do it. Right. But you have to have a plan. You have to have a leadership to do it.
And again, SEPTA is about 40%.
And SEPTA is exactly the same. Jeff Nippel, he knows exactly which ones are going to be put in tomorrow and day after.
Ryan?
And Mary, I just wanted to note that over the weekend, or Friday actually, Richard Hammer, who's the acting commissioner, who's the commissioner of the State Department of Transportation, wrote an op-ed for the Star Ledger in which he said that he just wanted to note that, positive train control was not, affected by this TTF spending freeze. And he said installation... continues. NJ Transit continues to advance its PTC installation in order to meet the 2018 federal deadline for completion of the system. So they're still saying publicly that they hope to achieve that goal.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Henry in Princeton is standing by, waiting to go live on Radio Times. Hello, Henry. What's your question?
Hi. I'm a student at Princeton University, and I use New Jersey Transit a lot to get into New York City for various things. But I wanted to ask, I know we talked a lot about safety and such, but I wanted to talk a little more about just delays and costs and in the whole scheme of things. Where exactly, I mean, you guys are the experts, and this stuff fascinates me, but I usually just ride the train, so I don't know. But I wanted to ask, where is the biggest obstacle, where is the biggest bottleneck in moving forward and improving New Jersey Transit? Is it with is it like the board? And I heard that you guys said that they haven't met recently, and or is it construction? Or I'm just curious here, what do you guys have to say on the biggest obstacle for New Jersey Transit right now?
All right, thanks for the call to Radio Times, Henry. Ryan Hutchins, do you have a sense of that?
Well, I talked a little bit about the Gateway Tunnel earlier, and I think that would, if you had to identify one thing, that would probably be the biggest for stopping, you know, for you know, ending some of these delays people are experiencing going into the city. You know, the tunnel, the North River tunnels, as they're called, that head across, they carry NJ Transit, they carry Amtrak trains. They were damaged quite a bit in Hurricane Sandy, and they've inside the walls they have you know, salt water that are continuing to erode them. These are already a century old. They were bad shape before the storm. Now they're even worse. And issues in there, you know, with power feeds, there were big delays. I think it was last summer that were caused by power feeds that went out. Two went out at the same time, and it caused major delays. You know, so I think once this Gateway project gets underway, once that gets finished, that will I think help a lot of the problems going into the city. You know, Transportation Trust Fund having more money, you know, replacing train cars, all that, you know, and switches and just equipment throughout the system will help. But Joe's probably better to say how exactly to tackle that.
Well, I'd go along, except for the branch that goes from Philadelphia to Atlantic City. NJ Transit's job is basically to bring people into Manhattan. And the bottleneck is long time. Before Sandy, the Hudson River tunnels were at 95% utilization. So if anything went wrong, then everybody, the Amtrak, New Jersey Transit, the system backs up from there. Hoboken turns out to be a relief spot because it's another route into New York City through the PATH tunnel and the ferry. However, you have to pass through Secaucus to get to there, and Secaucus is basically where everything funnels to get to the North River tunnels. So I'm pretty sure that the engineering staff at New Jersey Transit knows a whole series of bottlenecks through the whole system, but the number one one would be getting trains in and out of New York City directly. I would agree with that totally.
All right, we're going to squeeze one more question in. Greg in Doylestown, you've got about 10 seconds. Welcome to Radio Times.
Hello. Thank you. Say, is there an environmental input for the positive train control? For instance, if it's raining, the tracks are going to be more slippery and impede the ability to stop.
Thank you, Greg. An interesting question, Joe Martin.
Yeah, we usually don't have trouble with the trains being wet. We have trouble with leaves on the tracks, and SEPTA has a lot of those problems. I don't know particularly why. And I think that would be something that, yeah, it's a good question and something to be easy to load into the algorithm for what is a safe speed to throttle back on. I don't know if there's enough statistical information out there that had to be found to do that, but it could be loaded in that direction. My point being is that you would code it so that it said 50 miles an hour is safe, it's 45 in a wet fall.
All right, Joe Martiner, thanks to you for joining us in studio for Radio Times. Joe is a civil engineering professor at Drexel University, and Ryan Hutchins, great to have you with us.
Thank you. Thanks for being on.
Sure. Ryan Hutchins is New Jersey Bureau Chief for Politico. And don't forget, you can find our Facebook page and podcasts at whyy.org/Radio Times. Tell us what you think. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Thanks so much for joining us.